This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 141 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, we will be speaking with Lou Rubens, rap star. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting in the chair next to me is the Beast. Welcome back, Beast. You were on the road.
Hey, Woody. Yeah, I was on the road. I was playing out on the left coast for a bit and had a take a friend to the ER and all sorts of unpleasantries.
My, my, my.
So I was tied up.
Well, you weren't tied up, but, somebody I know does tie people up, though.
Yes, yes. And speaking of tied up, we have the master guru of ropes with us, Mr. Lou Rubens.
Welcome to the Kinky Cast.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So you're coming to us from the lovely state of one of the Carolinas, I think North?
That's right, North Carolina. Just moved here.
Yeah, because you used to be on the left coast, if I recall.
I sure did. I made a big change.
Wow, that is culture shock.
Yes, that's for sure.
Lou, you have been tying people up and doing what I call artistic rope for how many years?
I guess the artistic part has only been going since I hooked up my first computer in 2001 or so and saw so much other pretty bondages happening.
There are some absolutely gorgeous rope examples on your FET page, which just blow me away. That one in the attic that looks like a giant spider web just is.
That one is one of my favorites, too.
Oh, yeah. A lovely lady backlit and just like a circle of rope going out. So nice.
That was one of those very, very tricky ones, to true collaboration between all three of us.
How long does it take to do a scene like that?
That particular one took way longer than most of them do. We spent probably total 2 to 3 hours setting all that up.
I bet it was very involved. You also spend some time with our friend Cecil, Master Cecil, down at the woodshed.
I sure do. They're a good gang down there. One of my favorite gangs, in fact. They helped me through some hard times when I lived down there for 3 or 4 years.
Cecil's a wonderful soul. He's been on the cast a couple times, and the woodshed is really doing a great service for the community down there.
Must agree 100%.
Give us a little background. How did you get into this kinky world?
Well, I was always kinky from my earliest conscious memories. But as far as actually finding everybody, I hooked up my first computer in the winter of 2001 and did nothing but Google bondage stuff all over the place for the first couple months, and then made a conscious decision to try to make it my life.
See, back in 2001, it was bondage.com.
That's right. There was bondage.com was there, a few others at the beginning, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that's where I started back in the 90s when I got a high-speed connection, and all of a sudden I'm going, oh, look at all this stuff. It really did change the kink world as we know it. And we have interviewed some people that have been in the lifestyle for 20, 30, 40 years. And before internet, so BI, it was a very different world. And, you know, it was a friend of a friend and a secret knock on the door and everything to try to do networking. And it was very difficult. Now we type in kinky rope and off we go.
Definitely has changed a lot. I envied all those people that found it before the internet. I wasn't able to. I looked for them for a long time and never found my way in.
And, you know, it depends where you are, too. You know, I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Amsterdam, and so there is a lot of kink scene going there. But for people out in the Midwest and the smaller towns, it's a pretty dry zone.
It was indeed, Woody. It was indeed.
As you know.
As I know, from being out there in the rural America. What part of this country were you in back in 2001, Lou?
I was in very rural Washington State.
So I totally feel for you. The adult bookstores were few and far between, and the information there was scant, and the web was just getting started, wasn't it?
Absolutely right, yeah.
How did you make that first connection with a real person?
I started finding chat rooms and talking with people, found local people on chat rooms, then heard about Munches, and decided I would brave a local Munch, and went down to a small bar in Tacoma, Washington, and passed by the entrance several times.
As people often do, yes.
Wondered if I really wanted to take the chance, and finally did, and just snowballed from there.
What was your first love in the scene? Did you start in rope, or did you try a lot of things?
Yeah, bondage was always a thing, a part of my life. Like I say, from my earliest conscious memories, every relationship I was ever in, every kid in the neighborhood got tied up eventually under the guise of playing cowboys and Indians or playing army. So bondage was a strong part of my life. When I found out there was lots of others out here there like me, I delved into that mostly at first.
You got a hunk of rope and started tying knots, I guess.
Well, I'd already had a whole bunch of rope, but it was all big mix match sets and stuff like that. And a lot of things changed when I came in. One of the things was that we all started seeing that beautiful Japanese suspension stuff called shibari, and that just blew us all away. So many of us were working hard on emulating what we could see, those of us that couldn't fly to Japan and actually get lessons.
Yes, that was a time when Midori was coming on the scene quite rapidly, wasn't she? And she really exposed the states to the joys of the shibari art.
She sure did. I saw pictures all over the place. I wasn't able to actually see her live for a couple years after that or so, but it was some of the most inspiring stuff ever. It really is gorgeous. Still is. Yep.
Her book, Japanese Rope Bondage, is just an incredible photographic example of rope.
Must agree. She really did a great job with her book. She does a great job with everything. I've always admired her greatly because she is so well-rounded and has so much information, has done such a good job being an ambassador for all of us for many, many years.
How and when did you make the jump to the next level of rope? You had the, like all of us, you had the little bag of all sorts of different types and colors and textures. And at some point you made the jump to become serious. And when did that happen?
I sure did. The jump happened almost immediately before I even found people was when I made up my mind. Like I said, I looked through all those websites for the first 2 months when I hooked up a computer, and I realized a few things. I realized that there are people out there making a living off bondage, and that my bondage was as good as almost any of them. So I made a conscious decision at that point that I was going there. I was taking everyone with me I can, and I'm not taking no for an answer. And I attacked this world with a vengeance. Like I said, I opened up my first computer in 2001. By spring of 2002, I had my own bondage website up.
Wow.
You do move fast.
Yeah, I really attacked it hard. I did several hundred suspensions my first year and then started creating my own style due to the problems that we ran into with those suspensions. And people wanted to see my style and wanted to learn from me.
How do you describe the Lou Rubin style?
Labels are tricky, so I'm going to try to avoid those when I can. Shibari versus Western and all that kind of stuff makes less difference to me than the progression that I personally took. The problem that I saw people running into over and over was the radial arm nerve problems from the box arm tie. They came up so often that all the changes that I made in suspension to make those suspensions more comfortable helped. But those problems still happened, so I started changing to arms out suspension, thinking that if I could get somebody comfortably suspended with their arms out of it, I could do whatever I want with the arms after that and make scenes last way longer in the air.
Well, blood flow is a certain important thing, I guess.
Nah, Woody, nah. Nah. Nerves.
Yeah,
you're supposed to have nerves of steel. Nerves of steel.
There are a lot of misconceptions along those lines.
When you get somebody suspended and now with the arms out instead of all close to the body, you're still dealing with pressure points on the arms and what have you, to where you are pulling on nerves and blood vessels and things like that. And so I think you've worked out a technique to kind of spread that a little bit.
Yeah, that was part of what I was working on. For one thing, like I say, the arms cause all the problems. So leaving them out at first, I found ways to use a lot more different weight distribution ropes in different ways to lift somebody comfortably. For example, when you see someone in a regular suspension, often someone will, and having trouble breathing, often someone will run in and put their arms underneath their shoulders and lift up a little bit so they can take a few breaths and relax and try to settle into the tie a little bit. I figured if I put a rope right there in that same place, it could do the same thing as holding the people up. So in ways like that, I started developing where the problems were and how to fix them and solve them. Most problems come from the arms. The rest of the body, less problems happen. That was the biggest thing, making that change of weight distribution, adding more ropes and distributing them better.
I am just at this point, I have to ask, what was your industry before this? You sound like you got a scientific engineering approach to this problem combined with a good grasp of physiology.
Well, I'm not 100% sure that my past job started that up. I think it was more of my motivation to be a bondage freak making a living at it. But I was a cable guy for 22 years.
There is nothing related there.
He traded in his cable for rope.
That's right.
This become a real exercise in science and study then, because you're tackling problems and looking for solutions and taking notes and making evolutions here.
I really believe so, and it was mostly the motivation of wanting to make it better and really wanting to make changes and experimenting with different people, trying different things. I've always been good at solving problems. I love puzzles. Don't ever tell anybody when you're growing up that you like puzzles, because you get so many puzzles, Christmas, birthdays, breasts, everything else. And I found out there's puzzles I hate, but I learned to solve problems a long time ago, and it's one of my favorite things to do. In the creating that I do, it comes in handy too. I try not to be limited by anything and problem solve until I figure the things out.
Did you ever start down any roads that all of a sudden you realize, oh shit, I don't want to be here?
That's a really good question. I've done a lot of radio interviews and that one hasn't come up, but it's so true. I tell everybody one of the main reasons I run into all these possible solutions is because I try something different every time, which means I fail most of the time. So I've made lots of big mistakes, and luckily nobody's gotten hurt badly. And I try to make those mistakes low on the ground. It's one of the reasons that I tell people I really like the idea of a block and tackle when you're learning suspension, because you can start with someone on the floor, raise them 2 inches, see if it works or not, lower them, fix it, raise it again. You can go back and forth there and get several suspensions worth of learning, adaptation, and problem solving without danger to anybody.
That is such a unique approach that I don't see many rope people doing. They go straight for the suspension. They're building the whole tie with the plan that hits a suspension, and they aren't experimenting at all.
Exactly. And that's what made no sense to me. In my common sense, redneck kind of look at it, one of the things I found out later through lots of experience is the harder a person is working, the faster that progression of them having to come out of the tie happens. And bondage side of the professional world, which is different than BDSM community, we have more girls get faint or get uncomfortable from just standing by being tied than anything else. So I knew right away finding another way was going to work better.
So when you move into your bondage and photography areas, time is important here, because you want time to adjust lighting and get all your angles and all your shots in, so you can't ride off a tie after a couple minutes.
You're absolutely right. And a lot of people think that there's so many photographers and creators out there that are doing something just long enough to snap a picture. There are some extreme things that I've tried like that to get a good picture. But in general, if I want to create something nice, I joke with the girls that I'm tying up that It's all about my comfort. I have to make them so comfortable that they can let me relax enough to create something cool. It all starts with basically getting them up in the air comfortably enough to where I can relax, not worry about them, and start to run cool creative lines or colors or directions.
Well, gee, that makes perfect sense. I can't imagine.
There you go.
So how long are these, is a typical bondage tie photo shoot, how long is a typical suspension going for?
Typical would have to be an average. I don't do very much typical anymore, but if we're doing it for a picture, if I can get them up comfortably enough in almost anything and get 10 to 15 minutes, I can get all the pictures that I need. I do certain ties in play and in dungeons and in other situations, ties that I've created that people can stay up in indefinitely.
Wow, indefinitely?
That's a pretty big boast, I know.
Yes, that's a huge boast, and I'm sure that's been tested on more than one occasion.
That's the only way I could say that out loud with knowing that who might overhear. A lot of the typical suspensions when we first started just lasted a few minutes, and I started making some changes and made things more comfortable, and pretty soon people were staying up there for 15, 20 minutes. And after a while, with the changes with the arms out, I could get people up for half an hour. There's some new creations that only the people that come to the Lubari weekends hear about, the block and tackle stuff and a lot of the other things. My weekend intensive is the Lubari weekends. There's ties that I created that led to something I call my looping system, spelled L-E-W-P, of course.
Of course.
And where you can put almost anyone of any size in a face-up suspension, and it's nearly as comfortable as a hammock. They can play up there as long as they want. But the indefinite one is the one I call my self-puppeteering suspension, where the person can change their own position from right side up to upside down to legs forward, legs back, all kinds of different positions, and they can change them themselves. So any one position gets uncomfortable after a while. If they can change their own positions, they can stay up almost indefinitely.
That's remarkable. I've seen you do that, and it's just a magic thing to see how you do it. It knocks me out.
It took me a long time to figure that one out. It was created through fear over a big shoot we had one day.
Again, makes perfect sense.
Fear is a great, great motivator, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You have created a lot of super women that are able to fly on their own now.
Right. And teaching it in all kinds of different places, mostly my Lubari weekends. But I hope to have a video made out of the self-puppeteering suspension, because there's been a lot of call of it. So people can take it in until they can't get me out to their place.
Let's talk about head up versus head down situations. Obviously, we have blood flow situations we have to deal with. A lot of the suspensions you do are horizontal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the blood is kind of neutral in this case.
Sure.
Back in the formative years of rope bondage, we've always seen the tied by the ankles, hung completely upside down with the arms pulled straight out. Of course,
that's
if you
so sexy.
It's incredibly sexy, and it's very hot for me.
Yeah, me too.
But if the person weighs more than 100 pounds, it's going to be very tough, especially for more than a few minutes.
In most cases, I agree with you. There's a few of us that have a few ways that can make a lot of people last longer in that. The gravity boot, my gunslinger inverted, ways to distribute weight better. But what it usually comes down to for inverted is all the blood rushing to someone's head. And so when I first started inverting people, because I love inversions, I think they're very sexy. But when I first started doing them, people started having problems within a few minutes. And no matter how much changes, there were people, of course, exceptions to the rules that could stay upside down for an hour, but not very many. Things changed hugely right after I went to one of my cable guy classes on safety. I was in the class, and the guy teaching the class was talking about someone overturning in a car and hanging by their seatbelt for hours at a time. And I go, So I raised my hand. And I said, so how come then when, and I had to think of an excuse. How come then if I'm hanging upside down, like on the monkey bars at school, it feels like all the blood's rushing to my head? And he says, what's going on is your internal organs push on your heart and make your heart beat a little bit harder. The body can stay alive almost indefinitely upside down. You might get a headache if you go after too long. But the problem is in your head, for the most part, if you're too worried about it. So whether I absolutely believe this guy or not, I started talking with people about this before I put them up. A lot of times the girls that I was putting up. And when they realized that was the deal or believed what I said, since then I've had it verified a lot of times by a lot of medical people. All of a sudden people were lasting 3-4 times longer than they did in inversions, just having their own peace of mind about it. And the worst that's ever come from it is going too long and have a little headache for a while sometimes.
I had a submissive that gets really loopy when she's upside down too long.
There you go.
If that's a problem, why?
I didn't say it was a
okay, I stand corrected. Nice. I stand corrected.
Some people's favorite place to be is upside down.
Lou, you mentioned any size. This is a raging debate that we hear over and over in the rope community. Some people are just too big to be suspended.
Yeah, that problem has come and gone and come back again now. In my earliest days, people just couldn't figure out how. And I did. I've flown almost anybody that came to me that wanted to fly. Very rare when I couldn't. And then people started seeing how I was doing it and realizing that there were ways to get anybody up there. And then the two distinct bondage parties in this are the more Eastern taught stuff. There's lots of different names for it. Shibari, Kimbaku, all kinds of different names. And then there's kind of what a lot of the others of us do. Those two different worlds don't merge as well as a lot should, although a lot of us like to be parts of both of them. But one of the latest things lately is that I hear from the other sides that some people, are indeed too large to go up and don't work well in certain styles of what they're trying to do. But if someone wants to fly, I can teach almost anyone to make almost anyone fly.
So certainly there are certain ties that are not for everybody, but is a tie for everybody.
Now we're talking. That is one of the best ways I've heard it put yet. I love that. Yep.
You know, we see so much of the art. Larger size women are not exactly well received in some parts of the community. And so we see a lot of the art with slim minis. And we leave the real people out, shall we say. And it's nice to hear that there is a way for real people to participate.
Absolutely. And more real people are participating. We're all allowed our preferences, whatever those preferences are, and they're all just fine. But anybody with passion and motivation can make artistic things happen.
For your own play, how do you go about selecting a partner?
I am unbelievably jaded, spoiled, and a very lucky old man. I am very shallow as well. While looks aren't everything to me, they are my favorite place to start still. I like beautiful women. I like beautiful fit women. And if I'm lucky enough to find a beautiful fit woman who likes me, then we'll try hanging out.
And what do you look for in their mindsets? Daring, curious.
The rest of it's got to come. The rest of it, the like I say, the looks are a place to start, but there's so many things after that. For building the art, all it has to be is passion and strong desire, and a little bit of practice helps, but it's not the main thing. It's about being passionate enough to want to create something cool. As far as a play partner or a life partner, then, there has to be chemistry or it doesn't work for me. I always wished all my life that I was one of those guys that could just be with any woman, but that's never worked for me. A personal partner has to like bondage strongly. I've never had a choice in my life. My kink has been so strong. Without bondage, sex does not work for me at all. So that has to count in. And then chemistry, like I said, you got to get along.
The chemistry is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really bummed about chemistry sometimes because I've had to turn down or be turned down by some incredibly gorgeous women who I just didn't have chemistry with.
Now, Lou, you have a bevy of women you work with. You're one of the luckiest men in the Western Hemisphere.
I certainly am.
He admits it.
Yeah, I'm damn lucky.
I
still wake up every morning and pinch myself, and I'm glad when it hurts because I must be awake.
To make your hobby a true life's calling is a wonderful thing indeed.
I'm beyond anything I was capable of dreaming. I just feel like I live a dream. Yes, you work hard for anything, and the better your life is, the closer Murphy watches you. So I've had a lot of crazy times, and I've paid a lot of prices for the great way of life that I have right now.
When did you realize you had arrived on the national scene? You are one of the names now in the bondage world. When did you realize you arrived?
That's still one of the weirdest things to me, because I just, when some cute little girl comes up and stands in front of me and starts stuttering, trying to talk to me like the introvert that I was before I came into this, I go, what's wrong? This is not, I'm just a little country boy that had a bondage freak that I had to hide from everybody all my life. And I'll tell you when it was. After about 3 years into it, I Googled myself.
And
I went, oh my God, what the hell? That's what really threw me.
What had you created?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So needless to say, you're way out of the closet.
Oh, my goodness. I sure am. All the family knows, and all my friends know. I found that I have to keep it down a little bit lower profile in Bible Belt America here. But
Really?
We're only a few hundred miles away from you, so we know exactly about that belt.
We can relate.
So I watch my conversations at the dinner table when we go out to eat somewhere, stuff like that. But, yeah.
50 Shades and Fett is mainstreaming us.
Oh, my God. I just feel so fortunate. I spent most of my life up to my mid-40s. It was the scariest thing that could ever be found out about me. That was the thing that I was most afraid of in my entire life, is being outed or people finding out. And went from that, hiding it all my life, to it being my life is an incredible thing.
To literally being on book covers on the bookstore shelf.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Have you ever had to use the scissors?
Yeah, I have several times. I teach all this in my classes. I believe strongly in the safety part. And while I won't admit to being an expert on anything, I do believe strongly in my safety part. And I tell every mistake I've made, every mistake I've seen, I think we all owe it to each other to pass along all the mistakes we've made. And I've probably done a little bit more bondage than the average person.
A little bit.
And I've cut rope three or four times, three that I can remember distinctly. And two of those I probably didn't have to cut, but I did just to be on the safe side. One was definitely a tricky spot.
Ah.
And I tell all those in detail in my classes.
So when you cut a rope, one of your prize ropes, one of the ropes that you love so much, it's a little tough.
Yeah. Before and after, it's kind of tough, but when you're in an emergency state, it isn't even a consideration.
Let's talk about rope for a second. Obviously, we can all go down to Home Depot and get, I'm sorry, Dom Depot, and yeah, get that lovely woven nylon stuff. And every now and then, there's some hemp manila stuff and
sisal.
Sisal, that's right.
Don't forget sisal.
That's the good stuff. That's if we're really sadistic that day.
Yeah, that's right.
But
so I keep a set around.
Exactly. So at the different events that we go to around the country, we see vendors out there with hundreds of different ropes in beautiful, bright colors. Some are soft, just silky-like. Some are nasty. Where do you stand on ropes?
Yeah, that's a really tricky question, especially for people coming in that don't know. It's almost harder now than it was when there were very few choices.
That's true.
Because there are so many. There's no real easy way to get anybody started, except what I suggest a lot of times is a lot of it depends on how much money you want to spend and how sure you are that you want to spend that kind of money. I tell people the Home Depot solid braid nylon quarter inch is every bit as good as almost everything else out there, and a great way to get started because it's inexpensive. You don't worry too much if you cut it. You can run it through the washer to clean it. And I've never broken a piece of nylon. And you can't say that about any of the other kind of ropes out there, except for synthetic kind of ropes. As far as the other kinds go, find a good vendor. Talk to the people around you and talk about try a lot of different things. Personally, I like variety in almost all things more than any one thing.
You use the range of different rope for the effect, for the visual, the physical, the textural, all the different options that they bring, all the
experiments,
different
danger, everything I could think of. I've used everything from the ropes that we just talked about to 20-pound fishing line and almost everything in between.
Speaking of fishing line, the photograph that we were talking about earlier, the one in the attic, those were fairly fine ropes in that picture.
They were. They were actually nylon strings in that.
Now, how do you attach them to the body?
That was a very tricky one in that particular picture. We started playing around with string art ideas. And remember the string art of the 70s with the sails that curved and things like that?
Yep.
So I introduced my favorite photographer, Images by William, to the idea of string art. And he has a scientific mind. And he started Googling things. And he came up with that cylindrical shaped thing that was above her that we made all the other lines follow. I couldn't figure out that part of it. But then we had her kneel in that position once we had that ran. And then started with one string connected to a rafter, ran it down between her legs, around her waist, and then back out through the legs, and just kept doing that through a row of string art nails. That part took a couple hours, and then we stapled her hands down with a crisscrossing pattern just to make it look interesting. So that was a nylon string in that one.
Couple hours. Boy, isn't that interesting.
We had to pad her knees. We had to give her breaks when we could. But once we started the actual strings that were attached to her, she was stuck there. And that is a girl that I call the amazing Zona. She's just Zona on FetLife. But certain people that I run into get it from the beginning. They see an artistic idea. They help collaborate on it. And they're willing to do whatever it takes to get this picture done. And she's a very, very fit girl, very strong girl. She's an aerialist. And she was a little sore after that one.
So you start with somebody that has all that capability and they end up sore.
You guide your idea by the resources that you have. If we had had someone that was less strong than Zona, we might have tried something different. Zona just did another amazing one. We're hoping to release pictures on here soon. She just became a circus trainer. And so now she's teaching classes and she's become so over the top fit even since that picture that we were able to do 3-minute long stretches of photos with her in wrists only strappado suspensions.
Oh,
oh my.
Yeah.
She is a talented girl.
Outrageous. She's so strong. She could actually lift her butt up in that position to give her back a little bit of a break once in a while. Crazy.
So this is shot and in distribution yet?
Yeah, but it should be out running around here on the FetLife circles and other places soon.
I will have to check that out. That sounds very interesting.
All right, Lou, the rest of the year you're traveling. You travel much of the year, I'm sure, right?
I do. I only have one trip left, I hope, this year, because this year has been hell for traveling. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we've been trying to get you on the show since May.
Yes, and I've been almost nonstop since March or April, and I made up my mind that I was going to stop traveling, so what does Murphy say? Yeah, no. I have only one trip left. Hopefully, I'm doing a Lubari weekend in Orlando in November. Check my FetLife for that URL. We have to get the minimum sales, or I'm not going to get down there, but other than that, I'm going to try to settle in here and start shooting content for my bondage websites and settle in a little bit, maybe.
How many books do you have out on this?
You know, that's one of the funny things. I'm overdue for books. I have teaching videos out, and several times I've started book projects and they never came through, but I have lots of plans for books. I'm a little behind on the book curve, but I want to wait now until I can put out what I really like. And probably the first thing is going to be a coffee table book, because every one of those cool pictures that I have on FetLife has a nice little story behind it. So I want to tell the stories and put those in a coffee table book with those pictures. And that's one of the first things I want to do.
And that's one of the first books I'm going to get.
Nice. Stories are interesting. Pick a picture and I'll tell you a story.
Lou, how do people find you on Fet?
I'm just Lou Rubens on FetLife.
Just Lou Rubens. Okay.
And that's L-E-W, not any other way.
Thank you very much. L-E-W. And I don't have the Jewish E-U on Rubens, so it's just R-U-B-E-N-S.
All right.
And if you Google that, you can find all my other websites as well.
Okay. We want people to find you because I'm sure we're going to have many listeners that have a new approach to rope.
I have LouRubens.com, too. I forgot about that one. I got to plug myself better. I'm terrible at business, but I'm trying to improve.
All of those links will be available on the show page, so anybody that wants to find the many faces of Lou can go there.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Well, Lou, we thank you for talking with us. I've been enlightened.
Yes, it's amazing.
Thank you guys very much. It was fun talking to you. It was such a comfortable interview. It didn't even feel like an interview for this introvert turned extrovert. So you guys are nice and comfy. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening tonight. And this has been Lou Rubens on the many facets of rope. Check out one of his workshops, and you will be amazed.
You have been listening to episode 141 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we speak with Mistress Manita Femme Dom in Amsterdam.